12:37 is the time. Astonishing. Well, Simon Marks is on the line. I've almost given up trying to work out how best to introduce you, Simon, given that the latest... let's just say the survey the current landscape for us on the American presidential election, if you would.
Well, we're into the final full week of the election campaign, a phrase that I, for months, have coveted being able to articulate on the radio. It's almost behind us. And I think it's important to underscore that this is the final full week, not just of the campaign, but of the election itself. And that is not splitting hairs. I mean, we now know that nearly 60 million Americans have already voted. That's almost half the number of people that participated in the entire 2016 presidential election. So we have to put behind us this idea of Tuesday, November the 3rd, election day, the day, you know, boatloads of Americans are going to descend on polling stations, because boatloads of Americans have already made, in my judgment, the very sensible decision to put all this behind them. They've already cast their votes. So anything that happens over the course of the next week is irrelevant to them. For 48 million of them, that second presidential debate in which Donald Trump suddenly showed up, proving to be somewhat focused and disciplined for the first and only time on the election campaign trail, that all happened too little, too late. But equally, there are still about 60 or 70 million Americans out there who have not yet cast their ballots, and they are still engaged in a conversation that this weekend, amid record-setting numbers of new COVID-19 infections all over the country, intensive care units filling up, the state of Utah announcing last night that it is now having to ration access to intensive care units because the COVID-19 spike is so severe there. Those 60, 70, 80 million Americans who have not yet participated are still tuning in to people like the White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, scoring this rather spectacular own goal yesterday on CNN.
So here's what we have to do. We're not going to control the pandemic. We are going to control the fact that we get vaccines, therapeutics, and other mitigation areas.
Why aren't we going to get control of the pandemic? But
because it is a contagious virus, just like the flu.
Yeah, but why not make efforts to contain it?
Well, we are making efforts to contain it.
By running all over the country, not wearing a mask?
Jake,
that's what the vice president's doing.
We can get into the back and forth. Let me just say this. Is what we need to do is make sure that we have the proper mitigation factors, whether it's therapies or vaccines or treatments, to make sure that people don't die from this. But to suggest that we're going to actually quarantine all of America, lock down our economy.
No one's saying that.
Well, they are. Joe Biden's saying that. He says, lock everybody down. We're going to have a dark winter.
Just stunning, that from Mark Meadows, the White House Chief of Staff. COVID-19 and the state of the economy together, clearly in every poll, the top two issues in this election campaign. And 9 days before the election finishes, you think it's smart to go on television and actually articulate to the American public that the administration isn't even trying to control the pandemic. The response came moments later from Joe Biden's running mate, Kamala Harris.
They are admitting defeat. And I've been saying that, and Joe Biden has been saying that since the beginning. This is the greatest failure of any presidential administration in the history of America. And he went on to say you can't control it, like the flu. And yet again, they're suggesting to the American people that this is like the flu, when we have known from the beginning, and they knew since January, that it's five times more deadly than the flu.
I mean, it is almost a pastiche. I mean, Mark Meadows in that clip there was claiming that Joe Biden is planning to lock the country down, put everybody into quarantine over the winter. That is not what the Democrats are saying. There are all sorts of massive holes in the Democrats' policy proposals towards COVID-19. You could seriously be going after Joe Biden by saying, you've talked about a national mandate ordering Americans to wear face masks, but you know that as president, you almost certainly don't have the legal right to issue that order. So it's a pretty meaningful policy proposal that you're putting in front of the electorate. But instead, They are choosing to engage in just specious claims about the dark forces that are waiting like a Trojan horse in the wings to take over the country, the radical Marxist mobs that secretly control Joe Biden. And listen to President Trump on the campaign trail over the weekend. Here's the president talking about the number one issue in this election and a virus that has claimed more than 225,000 American lives.
That's all I hear. Turn on television. Right? COVID. A plane goes down. 500 people dead. They don't talk about it. COVID. By the way, on November 4th, you won't hear about it anymore. COVID. Please don't go and vote, COVID. Please do not, under any circumstance, you cannot go out and vote. Except the problems are that in Florida, the people that are going out to vote, nobody's ever seen anything like it. Because they're tired of all of this stuff. They're tired of such negativity. Hey, by the way, I had it. Here I am. I mean, you know, here I am.
I mean, by any measure, just crazy stuff. And I think it's really important to underscore there is nothing inherently Republican about denying the threat that a pandemic poses to the population of the United States. Look back at past Republican presidents. You can't imagine Ronald Reagan making light of a virus that had killed 225,000 Americans. This is not an inherently Republican position. It's an inherently Trumpian position, and that's why dissident Republican groups like the Lincoln Project, if you're not familiar with them, check them out online. They raised $39 million in the third quarter of this year, mostly from disaffected Republicans, to fund what is in essence as much an opposition campaign to Donald Trump as the campaign that's being mounted by Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
He didn't sound well, did he?
I mean, he sounds all right.
Well, the last bit. I mean, because sometimes he sounds very fluent.
I mean, it depends what he doesn't. If you look at what he's saying, he doesn't sound well. But, I mean, physically, I mean, look, I think he's definitely as over it as he can be. And to be fair to him, this guy is really putting the work in. The one thing that you have to say about Donald Trump is he is an absolute pugilist. He is going to fight until the last vote is cast.
Of course.
He is going to be making campaign rally appearance after campaign rally appearance. Perish the consequences for members of the staff who are traveling with him, because very few people at those rallies are wearing masks. But he's doing 2-3 rallies a day and will be in this hell for leather race for the finish. Joe Biden, by contrast, has largely over even the last week been holed up in Delaware. He's there again today. And there's a downside to that for the process. You know, COVID-19 has led Joe Biden to pursue a much more responsible campaign strategy than his opponent. But it has also stolen from the American people an opportunity truly to scrutinize the Democrat Party's presidential candidate. And compounding that is the fact that Donald Trump isn't going after him on policy at all. Donald Trump's going after the media for overstating COVID-19 and this ludicrous series of claims that Hunter Biden, Joe Biden's son, and Joe Biden himself were engaged in corrupt business activities in China, allegations that we learned this morning the Wall Street Journal thoroughly investigated and decided were not worthy of publication.
And, well, I'd suppose it's always a danger of trying to actually analyse these things rationally, but there's an offer there for people who would rather that COVID wasn't happening. A president essentially telling them that it isn't, or simultaneously boasting about having had it and recovered, while also saying that we'll never hear it mentioned again if you vote for me on election day. I mean, without denigrating anybody, I get that. Subconsciously, psychologically, the man who tells me there's nothing to worry about, even while my house is burning down, is quite a seductive human, quite a seductive politician.
Yeah, but he's also quite a dangerous politician because he's sowing the seeds for a reality here where if Joe Biden wins the presidency, as continues to look likely, I mean, he's 8 points ahead nationally in the polls. He's still between 3.5 and 4 points ahead in the key battleground states where the election will be decided. He rolls into the White House at the end of next January, and you have a public that is split down the middle between those people taking COVID-19 seriously, who believe that actually the country does need to take steps to control the pandemic, and the sizable number of Donald Trump supporters who believe that being told to wear a face mask is a fundamental infringement of their constitutional rights, and that absolutely it's perfectly fine to go and join thousands of people in a packed stadium either to watch a political rally or they hope one of these days to watch a football game. I mean, it is potentially going to be a monumental problem for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris in office to try and turn a new page at the end of January, assuming they win, and to say to the American public, guys, you've got to forget everything you've heard so far. America is now in a war and we need everybody to make a sacrifice.
You've got to turn this oil tanker around. Simon Marks, great stuff as always. Many thanks indeed.